the legislation is unconstitutional because it's connected to the social credit legislation, which is unconstitutional because of Section 91. Mr. Justice Duff, who was the Chief Justice, went further. And he said that the legislation is unconstitutional because Canada has a constitution similar in principle to that of the United Kingdom. This is the preamble to the British North America Act. We have a constitution similar in principle to that of the United Kingdom. What does that mean? Well, it means that Canada is a democracy. It's one of the principles that we inherited. The breath and life of democracy is free parliamentary discussion, free public discussion of social issues. So the government of Alberta cannot prevent free public discussion because Canada is a democracy. So what Duff was trying to do was to read into our unwritten constitution some basic principles, such as freedom of expression. He also went on to say that only the federal government under Section 91 can restrict human rights. The provinces can't do that. I can't remember his reasoning for that, but once again, division of powers grounds for protecting human rights. So in a number of cases after 1938, lawyers argued in favor of the Duff Doctrine. The majority of the court in 1938 didn't disagree with the Duff Doctrine, it's just that they decided for other reasons. So it might have been possible for a number of years for a majority to have accepted the Duff Doctrine, but we have an unwritten constitution with basic principles of democracy that cannot be contravened, certainly not by the provinces, but possibly even by the federal government. So the, in a number of cases, the Duff Doctrine was mentioned, but it wasn't until the 1970s, in the Dupont case, that the majority actually disagreed with the Duff Doctrine. In the 1960s and 70s, I guess it was 1960s this case started, when I was a student in Quebec. And, you know, Quebec students are demonstrating all the time. I went to a demonstration against something, the war in Vietnam, or against tuition fees or something, at least once a month in Montreal. There were hundreds of thousands of us who did this. This is part of Quebec tradition. So, the problem is that for the city of Montreal, if there are all these demonstrations, the police have to be there for the demonstrations to make sure there's no trouble. And their budget runs out at the end of the fiscal year, right? So the city of Montreal passed a bylaw saying there can be no more demonstrations during this fiscal year without a permit from the chief of police. And of course, no one ever got a permit because they didn't have the budget for it. So a woman by the name of Dupont took a case that eventually got to the Supreme Court of Canada saying that this is a violation of freedom of speech and it violates the Duff Doctrine. The majority of the Supreme Court of Canada said the Duff Doctrine doesn't exist. We don't have an unwritten constitutional bill of rights. The Quebec government, or the city government, had every right to restrict demonstrations the way that they had. They didn't prevent them, you just had to get a permit. That was one of the decisions that led to people supporting the idea of a Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And lo and behold, once we had a Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, the Duff Doctrine was revived. And now it's part of our Constitution, that in addition to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, we have an unwritten Bill of Rights that cannot be contravened by any government. We don't know the content of that unwritten constitution yet, other than the Duff Doctrine, freedom of expression, but it's there and it could be expanded by the courts in the future. Any questions about this fascinating case? By the way, it was the this week, during all the newspaper stories about Peter Lougheed, there was an excellent op-ed piece written by Jeffrey Simpson, and he talked about the importance of Lougheed in terms of ending the social credit dynasty in Alberta. The Socreds were very, very narrow-minded. It was embarrassing to grow up in the province with such a restrictive government. it was such a relief to get Lougheed and his government there. Of course, the premiers that followed him weren't nearly as good, up until the current one, possibly. But the remnants of the social credit government became the Reform Party, as Simpson writes, and then, of course, they have become the majority in the New Conservative Party. And so he was talking about the need for the balance between progressive conservatives and the old Socred reforms. Fascinating piece if you haven't read it. So, during World War II, Canadians did not treat the Japanese Canadians, as you know, very well. In 1945, there was a secret trial of a Soviet defector that led to the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. If Canadians can be convicted and even executed from evidence from a secret trial, all of us have our rights in danger. So the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, ever since, has been one of the main interveners in court cases in the Supreme Court of Canada. Maurice Duplessis in Quebec, up until the Quiet Revolution of the 1960s, was very, very restrictive of human rights. That led to a number of Supreme Court cases that actually overturned some of the legislation enacted by the Duplessis government. Pierre Trudeau was banned from teaching at Quebec universities because he supported human rights. So all kinds of terrible things happened until the Quiet Revolution in the 1960s. John Diefenbaker was the progressive conservative prime minister in the late 60s, late 50s and early 60s. He had been a defense lawyer in Saskatchewan. He was skeptical of Dicey's admonition that if you simply apply the rule of law correctly, this is all you need to protect human rights. You don't need a Bill of Rights. Diefenbaker was very concerned that some of his clients hadn't been treated fairly. Some, he felt, had been unfairly executed, and they were innocent, and yet they had been convicted and executed. He felt very strongly that Canada needed a Bill of Rights so the judges would actually do what Dicey said they would do, or ought to do. So the Canadian, he wanted a Bill of Rights that covered the federal and provincial jurisdictions. He couldn't get the agreement of the provinces, so the Canadian Bill of Rights was passed. It only applied to the federal jurisdiction. And because it did not have constitutional status to begin with, judges didn't give much credence to it. In other words, since it wasn't part of our Constitution, how could it ever take precedence over other legislation, other ordinary legislation? By the way, just about everything that is in the Canadian Bill of Rights is now in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. The Charter is much richer, though. One of the early Canadian Bill of Rights cases was Robertson and Rossitani. This is with regard to the Federal Lord's Day Act that said that most businesses have to be closed on Sunday. It's copied from a British statute going back hundreds of years. And the Supreme Court of Canada said that the Canadian Bill of Rights begins with a preamble saying that don't have it here, but the preamble says that Canada has a tradition of respecting human rights. So they said, well, if the Lord's Day Act has been in place all these years and we have a tradition of respecting human rights, there's no violation of human rights. It's just a holiday for people who aren't Christians. Then there was the Drybones case in 1970. This is the first case where the Supreme Court actually gave teeth to the Canadian Bill of Rights. And Drybones was a Dene person from the Northwest Territories. The Federal Indian Act used to say that no Native person in Canada could be intoxicated off the reserve. At that time, there were no reserves in the Northwest Territories. Drybones came into Yellowknife. He got drunk. He was arrested for violating the Indian Act. He paid the $10 fine and was let go. a young lawyer who just graduated from the University of Toronto and was practicing law in Yellowknife saw the conviction. He said, well, this is contrary to the Canadian Bill of Rights. The Canadian Bill of Rights prohibits discrimination. So he went out and he found dry bones on the trapping line, went with a translator, got dry bones to sign the document for an appeal. And this young lawyer from Yellowknife took the case all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada. The Supreme Court said, clearly, the Indian Act violates dry bones rights. First of all, it discriminates based on race. Second, there is no reservation in the Northwest Territories, so it doubly discriminates. They struck down that part of the Indian Act. And Canadian lawyers who supported human rights thought, finally, the Supreme Court is going to enforce the Canadian Bill of Rights. It's a useful document after all. Then we get to Lavelle and Bedard. That's the other case you read for today. Lavelle and Bedard has a very close connection to McLaughlin College. Mrs. Lavelle was a native person. In those days, from 1867 up until very recently, the Indian Act said that an Indian man could marry a non-Indian. The non-Indian would become an Indian, and their children and grandchildren would become Indians. But if an Indian woman married a non-Indian, she would lose her Indian status, and all her children and her descendants would lose Indian status. So Mrs. Lavelle didn't know that when she married a non-Indian. And her son, Nimki, she wanted to have Indian status. By the way, eventually her son, Nimki, became the residence life coordinator of our residence here in McLaughlin College. So that's the McLaughlin connection. And I've met Mrs. Lavelle, a wonderful, charming woman. Anyway, she went to court with the help of, a well-known Toronto lawyer who did all the work pro bono. They felt, well, based on the dry bones precedent, surely the Supreme Court of Canada will declare this part of the Indian Act unconstitutional. In the end, the Supreme Court lost its nerve. There was a big argument in the court, well, should we be activists and contradict the government legislation? Should we leave it up to the government to correct discriminatory legislation? They realized that on the native reserves, there is a big issue. Most native men did not want this part changed. Most women did. And they thought, gee, this is getting too involved in politics. What they decided is Mrs. Lavelle had a choice. She didn't have to marry a non-Indian. So it was her choice to become a non-Indian. There's no discrimination in the act. After dry bones, there were several other cases where the Supreme Court failed to give teeth to the Canadian Bill of Rights. Ending with Dupont, that I mentioned to you already in 1978. So, that's the background of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Because there is so much disappointment with the decisions of the Supreme Court of Canada, both some before the Canadian Bill of Rights, but certainly after the Canadian Bill of Rights, it was just the dry bones case, the only successful case. There was a lot of pressure for a constitutional Bill of Rights. And that was certainly led by Pierre Trudeau. He knew that human rights were very popular in Canada. Peter Lougheed won the election in Alberta based on a human rights platform. Diefenbaker had done very well with the human rights platform. Trudeau also wanted Canada to have its own amending formula. He thought it was embarrassing that we had to go to England to ask for our constitution to be changed. Most Canadians were not interested in this problem that we had with constitutional amendment. It's not an exciting subject. So Trudeau's idea was, and also Trudeau wanted language rights better protected for Francophone Canadians outside of Quebec, and for Anglophone Canadians inside Quebec. Language rights are divisive. So his strategy was, Well, let's focus on a Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. We can get 80% of Canadians behind us. And by the way, we'll have a constitutional amending formula, and we'll have some language rights as part of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. But what we're going to talk about is human rights, basically, not language rights, and not the amending formula. So it was a strategy that eventually worked. And one person who played a very big part in that strategy was Roy McMurtry, who's the Chancellor of York University. By the way, when I started my dissertation research, Roy McMurtry was the Attorney General of Ontario. And I felt before I started asking to interview Crown attorneys and court administrators, I should really let somebody know in the ministry what was going on. So, I'll never forget the day when I phoned an assistant deputy minister. He passed me on to the deputy minister. He passed me on to Roy McMurtry. Within half an hour, I was speaking to the attorney general. I was stuttering. I was almost speechless. And he said, well, yeah, it sounds like a reasonable project, but we need to talk about this in person. Come to the legislature this afternoon. I'll come out from behind the curtain at a certain time. Be there. We'll chat. So I chatted with him for 20 minutes. He said, great project. Go ahead. So he's really an amazing person, and we're so lucky to have him as a chancellor. But he's a peacemaker. When the 8 provinces, not including Ontario and the federal government, were at loggerheads over what to do, he was one of the people that, along with Peter Lougheed, suggested a compromise that eventually worked. And there are others involved in that too, Jean Chrétien or Romano, from Saskatchewan, and the NDP government. So people like that, I think, are true statesmen, true leaders, and boy, we sure need more of them today. So that's my class for today. I'm anxious to have a glass of wine and get ready to go to Jamaica tomorrow. But do you have any questions?
Question about presentation.
Presentations, yes.
So next week, what kind of presentation?
next month. Well, I've got the list of... who has the sign-up list for presentations? Here it is. Has everybody signed this? Good. So I will post this on the class webpage as soon as I get back from Jamaica. There are 6 presentations for the October class. Most people are going in November. They want to see what will happen. I kind of give extra grades for the students that are willing to go first. So, congratulations for doing that. But basically, I just want you to say, well, this is what I found really interesting about that reading. I don't want you to summarize it, because all of you will have read it. Make sure that you get to all the required readings, even if you skim them. You actually learn more by skimming than reading carefully, because you remember it. Your mind doesn't get bored. So at least skim through all the readings. And then you can say, you know, this is what I got out of the reading, or this is what really I disagreed with. And then you can say, this is a question that I really like the class to discuss. And for every one of these readings, I will be prepared to say, well, here are the things that I thought were important. And I'll probably have some additional questions for class discussions. Okay? So, any other questions? Well, you're a wonderful class, and I look forward to seeing you in the courtyard and seeing you in November.
Have a good trip to Jamaica.
Thank you, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Oh yes, and if you could leave behind your name tags, that would be great.
The
6140?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're an MCAL student?
Yes.
Yeah. For the non-MCAL students, it's slightly more difficult, but it's not too much.
I always
Well, I'm trying to create an inventory of criminal justice reforms. That can be done online. And so we'll find work for you to do. Bring your home when you're not working, if you don't have any time. Yes. Best to get it done. Blink, I'll make sure you get it done by the time you finish your degree. You're welcome. For those who are still here, can I make another announcement? I was asked about PowerPoints for your presentation. You don't have to do that. About half the students do, though, and you can either bring your memory stick the day of the class or email it to me in advance, and if I have time, I'll post it on the class webpage so that you can easily access. But you don't have to do it. It's entirely up to you.
What time does the classes run on Thursday?
7 to 10.
And how do I sign up
for that? Oh, are you an MPEL student? Yeah, you just go online and register.
Okay.
And there's no extra charge.
So do I go to Jasmine? I don't see that option.
Oh, it's not one of the required courses, but it is up on the Jasmine will tell you how to do. That's okay. Probably the best thing.
Okay, and if I'm already working in the course system,
then you've done your internship.
Okay. So, do I have a choice to go and get something else?
Maybe if we have enough positions.
Okay.
But we'll give priority to students that don't have that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. You're very welcome.
Have a safe trip.
Thanks very much. Oh, thank you very much. That's very nice. Any other evaluations and readings? Thank you very much.